Hello and welcome to Building Your T-Shirt Empire. My name is Cole and with me as always is Gavin. In today's news, we have a lot of great stories, so let's jump right into it. The upcoming Graphics Pro Expo is here in Long Beach, August 17th through the 19th. It's going to be a fantastic opportunity to see not only the new manufacturing equipment for apparel, but also to check out some of their signage and wide format printing to see if that might also be a fit for your business.
So if you register for Printing United Expo, which is gonna happen in Atlanta later this year in October, you'll get two trees that gets planted in your name and your honor. That's super cool. So Printing United Alliance and Domtar. So Domtar is a provider of packaging paper. They got together to do this super cool thing. So Printing United Expo is one of the biggest trade show for the print and promo industry. Are you gonna go to it?
Here's an interesting story about digital IDs coming to apparel. The Eon Group is now working with huge manufacturers like H&M and Coach to introduce labels that will track the full supply chain by simply scanning their labels. It's a really interesting way to move forward towards recyclability and sustainability, and to also see where your product actually comes from and not just have a tiny little country written, but instead a full experience for the customer to engage in, to know that they're getting the quality apparel that they hope they're buying.
And fashion news. Now, listen to this. KFC, you know, the restaurant, they just launched a t-shirt collection. Panera Bread, they just formed their own swimwear line. Chipotle, they're now doing sustainable fashion. And Taco Bell, they launched a limited edition accessory and clothing line. What? So fast food restaurant is not just for eating anymore. They're selling t-shirts. So these brands, they're now getting into streetwear, creating their own t-shirt brand, or collaborating with other brands to get into custom merch. What do you think about this? Would you buy a t-shirt from one of these restaurants?
In other news, the Print Hustlers conference tickets have just gone on sale. This event, November 4th through the 6th, is guaranteed to sell out. It does every single year, and the speakers will be phenomenal as always. It's going to be held in Southern California, and so I'm excited to be there and see as many people as humanly possible. Get your tickets quick. It always sells out. So today we have a great guest. We have Marshall Atkinson, known from Atkinson Consulting and so many other projects that he works on. Marshall, why don't you take over and let the people know what it is you do on a daily basis?
Yeah, well, I'm an industry coach. Right. So what I do is I help people clarify and untangle their problems. Right. And so that could be a business problem or a leadership issue, or they worried about their pricing, or how they want to make more money. So we work on a cost optimization project. So there's a lot of things. Kind of my superpower, I think, is that I don't necessarily have all the right answers, but I'm very well connected. And in about a text message or an email, I have the right issue or right answer if I don't know the answer. But I've been doing this for a long time, and everything I do is custom to the shop and what's going on. And so it's really about helping people get to their next level or achieve their goals by really working and brainstorming and questioning and challenging. And as Gavin will tell you, I ask a million questions. Right? So it's all about unraveling the truth behind things. And some people don't know why they're doing something or why they think about something or that type of thing. And so you really have to kind of unearth that and dig around a little bit in that. And then we can discover what the next steps might be and where the quicksand is on that. And we can talk all about outcomes and stuff, right? So that's kind of what's going on, right? And so I have a consulting business. That's my Atkinson Consulting. And also have another project I do called Shirt Lab, which is all about training for the industry, mostly in sales and marketing, although we do some production stuff. We have a mastermind group called Shirt Lab Tribe. And then we do either virtual or in-person events. And we have an in-person event coming up at the end of July here in New Orleans with a fantastic lineup. And we do at least one of those a year, 2019, we lost our minds and did four events. I don't know what we were thinking then, but that's what's going on. And so, so that's what I do. And I'm all about helping people. And my latest project is all about understanding artificial intelligence with the Midjourney platform. And so there's a lot of creative AI out there, you know, Stable Diffusion and DALL-E and, you know, whatever. And Midjourney, I think, is giving the best images. And it's very quirky and hard to use a little bit. I mean, it lives on Discord. It's word-based, and so your words really matter. It's not as intuitive as you think it is. And so I have a newsletter that I built. I'm an ex-art director, so I think about art constantly. So it's really about how professionals, creatives, are using the platform to iterate and create faster and get the results that they want. So that's kind of what's going on with that. And I've been exploring Midjourney for several months. And a fun project I do for myself is I create using Midjourney daily for up to 15 minutes. And then whatever the best image of that exercise is, I post that on my social media and share what's going on. And I try to do that every day. And a lot of the images I post is like 5 minutes of work, and here it is. Some take a little longer, and I'm re-rolling and iterating and doing some different things. But it's kind of an exercise I'm using, and I'm teaching myself the different prompts and what that effect, those words, what the end result is. And by just doing that 10 or 15 minutes a day allows me to learn the program, right? So it's kind of a journey, Midjourney journey.
Yeah. I mean, we're using it now for like our covers on YouTube and stuff, where we're using it to create like interesting covers, and then we're doing face swaps on top of them.
Right.
I've been playing with it quite a bit. What I've found is it has limitations to the amount of parameters that it will pay attention to before it just starts ignoring everything.
Yeah, it's around 60 words.
Yeah, so if you start telling it, you know, there's seven people and this person is wearing a red shirt and this person's wearing a blue shirt, at some point it just starts spitting out random images that aren't what you're describing.
Yeah.
And so the interesting thing I've found is using it kind of as a way to give customers a bunch of baseline options. And then once they have those baseline options, they can then, you know, that can get turned into something that you can vectorize, or you can, you know, at least not waste your time with sketching. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the best thing to do is remember that Midjourney is not Photoshop. And the more specific you are with the prompt, the least likely that you could actually find the result that you want. So if you're wanting seven people and they're each wearing something different, it's probably better to do seven different images of Midjourney and just throw it all into Photoshop, because it's going to take you less time to create that image. Right. So you could I did an experiment where I was doing a T-shirt for a fake restaurant bar called the Green Iguana Tequila Bar. Right. And I created the iguana and then the background and then the shots of tequila and then a texture to put into the type. I created all that in Midjourney, threw it into Photoshop and separated it. And it's like maybe 20, 25, 30 minutes of work. Right.
Yep, and absolutely.
If we did all that in Midjourney, you would be re-rolling to the cows come home. You wouldn't be happy with it. It was just easier to do it all in pieces and just assemble it. Right. And so that's kind of a better way of using that. So.
And speaking of Photoshop, I mean, I don't know if you've loaded up the Photoshop beta with all of the AI generation in that.
Yes.
But that that's pretty amazing, the way you can like select individual people, change, you can literally change outfits on existing photographs. All that stuff's really fascinating to see it evolve. And I'm sure that's Midjourney's real threat, is Adobe just getting so good that there's no reason for Midjourney.
Well, I don't know about that, because Adobe is, of course, trained on the Adobe world, right? And not necessarily on other things, right? So if you wanted to do a 1969 Camaro, right, Adobe might not have that image, right? Or, other things, right? So Adobe gives you what it gives you. And I think Midjourney, the power of that is the fact that it's any image that it has access to on the internet, which is billions of images and image pairs. And, I've played around with Photoshop, generative fill and stuff, and it does great. It does a great job. But is it making that tie-dye butterfly like you want, mm-hmm. Or whatever? I mean, and it gives you what it gives you. And I think the power of Midjourney is that it iterates really quickly, and you can just change a couple words or re-roll. Or now it's got some just amazing things where it's you can zoom and move things around, and knowing how things work, and also you can select Pantone colors if you know how to do that. That's something I discovered last week. Was how to do Pantone colors in Midjourney. There's a process. You just have to know how to do it, right? So,
have you found one of the things that I've found with Midjourney is it's outputting things that are basically just kind of classic HD. Is there an AI upscaler that you prefer right now? I've played with a lot of them, and they all seem to have their ups and downs.
I like Gigapixel.
Gigapixel. Is that one paid or free?
It's paid. But most of the tools that are worth a darn, you have to pay for. So, so I like Gigapixel. I use it daily. It'll take, when you get your download, your Midjourney file, it's like a 1028 by 1028 at 72 DPI. Gigapixel blows it up to be a 72 DPI file, but it's 54 inches square. So you can resample that to a 300 DPI file at 15 or 16 inches, right? And it'll be 105 megs file. I mean, and it's super clean and crisp, perfect for what we do, right? And you can start playing around with it in your Affinity or Photoshop or whatever you use, and you can start playing with that from there, and you have a great source file to use.
Very cool. Yeah, I mean, Gavin, you're in the art space too. What have you been seeing with people trying to implement AI art versus just building it out of either clip art libraries or building it from scratch?
Yeah. Yeah, actually, Marshall and I, we are in conversation with the Midjourney. From our end, most of our customers, they're coming in with pre-ready art, right? Mm-hmm. And our business is set up mainly to take care of those type of files. But we do get some one-offs, like somebody want a super high-end simulator process. But our customers, from what I'm seeing, like not a lot of our customers are taking advantage of that, at least right now. There are, again, some one-off jobs that just come in. And the way we're set up is like, cause we've tried to go down that rabbit hole and we hesitated a little bit. We tried again and hesitated. And it has to kind of fit. It has to at least make business sense for us, mm-hmm. and to be able to dedicate somebody to just like fully just do that. I just haven't seen it yet, so that's why I've been kind of just really reluctant to just go down that without like investing a lot of time and money into it.
Yeah.
Without seeing the result, like money wise.
And the thing is, like a lot of our business ends up being vectorized artwork. That's what most graphics end up being. And so I guess you could take something out of Midjourney and then live trace it or something in Illustrator. But Marshall, have you heard or seen anything that has to do with AI vectors? Is that even a thing yet?
I was looking at something the other day. What was it? There's a program called Kittl, K-I-T-T-L. Which has vector templates and stuff with it, and is a way to create art for an AI, and you can upload things, and it's a pretty interesting program. I messed around with it for like maybe 5 minutes, but I'll tell you what, I'm a big believer, and you absolutely don't need vector art for T-shirts. You can separate using channels in Photoshop and get a super cream, clean, crisp edge. Like, to me, I wouldn't bother vectorizing an image because I know how to separate it. Like, I just would never do that. That's a step I don't believe you need.
With doing channel separations like that, I mean, we do it basically based on the artwork. If it comes in vector, then that's great. But if it is built in Photoshop, we don't necessarily vectorize it either.
Right.
Do you like some of those software separation companies like Separation Studio and AccuRip? Or do you like to do it just 100% inside of Photoshop and then send it out?
I'm an old school dude, man. I do it the way that I've always done it, which is using LAB to create the underbase, use the L channel, and then I create my channels and boop, I'm done. And actually, a lot of times when I'm designing and separating as I'm working. But if someone was to send me a file, I would separate it that way. I like control. I'm a guy in Photoshop. I use curves. I like the info palette. I like my pointer to be a 3x3 pixel sample average. And then another thing that I want is if you know how the shop is going to print, you know, for example, how small of a halftone can they keep? So if you've got a gradation, you know, do they blow it out at 12%? Right? You need to take that into account when you're doing the seps, right? So that's a conversation we should have about how small of a halftone you can hold, right? And that has a lot to do with how you're imaging, how you're exposing your screen room craftsmanship, all that stuff, right? You know, I want to dial that in for what is achievable on press. And that's just how I think as a designer, you know. And so I knew that when I was doing way back when I was an art director, I knew all that for the shop I was working at, right? And Gavin, do you get into that when you're doing seps for people? Do you ask how small of a halftone they can hold and all that? That way they can replicate what you're actually separating?
Yeah, so when we onboarding the customer has to fill out what we call a profile, and we have that conversation. Hey, what is the halftone that you can hold? What's your, do you even have a rip? Because some customers don't even have a rip, right? Do you want pre-manufactured halftone, or are you gonna have, let the rip does it yourself? Every customer is a little bit different. So normally that happens when the customer would come in, hey, sometime they could provide us with a sample, and the sample, hey, this is something that I printed was really good, just mirror that. Or they'll be like, hey, we want you to take the lead. Yeah, it all happens in the front end, just trying to figure all that out and then build like a profile and then pass that to the graphic designer for the graphic designer to duplicate.
Interesting thing you might think about is give them a test file to print to see what they're able to achieve, right? Mm-hmm. With a gradation scale and maybe some different line weights and, you know, a printed e-scale, you know. I don't know if you guys know what an e-scale is, but back when you used to do typography, you had an actual scale with the letter E and all different point sizes, and then what can you hold, you know? And so it's just and I think there's a lot of different levels of craftsmanship in this industry. And it's really funny looking online in forums at the total amount of wrong answers that people give.
Yeah.
And they swear up and down, this is the way to do it. And it's like, okay, why are you saying that, right? So
there's a lot of ways to get some sort of product out, even if it might be a pretty difficult way to get there.
And one thing I found, like, every shop, like, just going through every shop, handle SEM process differently, every shop, right? Because again, like, could you hold certain dots on your screen? How good is your screen making process, right?
Yeah.
So it's really like it's not a one size fit all. It really has to be like a very granular thing that you, hey, this is what I like. Right. When it comes down to it, yep.
So the way I've always thought of it is there's the rule of four with halftones, right? So you multiply your dot size by four to get your screen that you should be using, you know? And what we used all the time was a 63.4 angle, 50 line dot, elliptical shape, and we would use 230s. Mm-hmm. And it was perfect, right? And we wouldn't ever get moiré. And, you know, an easy way to check if your actual RIP software is printing the angle is just to, instead of printing a screen, print it on a piece of paper. And then you can just use a protractor that you buy at Target for $1.50 and measure the angle. And is it the same angle that you've entered into your RIP, right? And sometimes it's not, right? And so that's what you need to be doing. So,
yeah, definitely. Let's talk. So you and I, we've done some work together with a consultant. And one thing I'm going to say, just like that kind of really helped me out a lot. And it, so I want to, maybe you could touch up on that. As you introduced to me this thing that you call like four sheet of, I'm not sure the term that you gave, but like
the four sheets of paper.
The four sheets of paper. I would love for you to just talk about that. To me, that was like, it really, really helped me when I was like in a, tough situation with some people. Talk about that.
So the four sheets of paper is an exercise that you can do with a problematic employee. Maybe this is somebody that you've had challenges before and you're at your wit's end and you know that you need to have a really tough conversation. So the idea behind this is that you're talking about the outcome, and what we want to be is outcome forward, right? So the four sheets of paper is something that you do with the employee in a meeting. And so the idea here is that the first sheet of paper is for you to fill out about what the situation is. So let's say they're late a lot, or they're making lots of mistakes, or I don't know what the problem is, but you write down exactly what you want them to do. Right? They need to show up on time, or they, whatever it is, they, like, you're exactly very specific about it. And the reason why it's wrong, everything is on that first sheet of paper about what the situation and the problem is. It's all on there. It's all documented. And you and the employee agree that this is the totality of the situation. Okay. The second piece of paper is, what do they need to be able to accomplish what's on page one, right? So they need special training. Do they need some tools? Do they need more time? Do they need whatever they need? They need a new computer. They need a new cell phone. I mean, whatever it is, you're agreeing that you'll get them whatever they need to hit the first page. Yeah. Okay. The third page is what happens if the first page is accomplished. Okay, now you can set a date, or it's just a general thing or whatever, but what happens with the employee if they get whatever the problem is on page one fixed, right? Do they get a raise? Do they get a bonus? Do they get a trip to Hawaii? Do they get to keep their job, right?
Probably the last one.
Whatever the thing is, right? What do they get? What's the carrot you're dangling out there, right? Mm-hmm. And of course, the fourth piece of paper is what happens if they don't do it. Okay. They lose their job. They get demoted, whatever, right? Something's going to happen if they don't hit the first page. Now, what happens with this is that either they're going to be on track. I like to have things by a date, and we've got multiple benchmark meetings or, things set up there, we're looking at progress and we should see progress. We might have an occasional problem or two, but we're working through that. And by this date, the thing gets either accomplished or not. And what I'll tell you is either the person works it out, or they self-terminate because they can see I'm not going to hit that October 10th deadline because it's already August and I've failed three times. I know I'm going to be fired. I'm just going to look for a new job. See it. And the beauty of this is the fact that they self-terminate, then you don't have to pay all the worker, dividends, all that stuff, right? It's just like they've quit and you're done, right? And so that prevents you from having to fire them, and they make the decision for you, right? And so it's an easier conversation to have when they do it. But the thing here that I want to stress is that you're managing people with clarity. You're defining the outcome. You're setting the expectations that are crystal clear. Because here's what I'll tell you is a lot of people, they don't know what the right thing is. You think they know just because they walk through the door that they've learned this stuff by osmosis, just because they're here and present. Mm-hmm. They know what the right thing is. And a lot of times the answer is they don't know because you haven't been clear. You're clear as mud, right? By doing stuff like this, you make it really easy for them to decipher what is the right thing to do and the wrong thing to do. Because you're actually having a conversation about it. They're signing their name to the piece of paper. And this completely obliterates any confusion.
Yeah.
So
yeah, that's really good. Pieces of paper. I struggle with that.
Yeah. I enjoy the management side of
Yeah, I have a habit of bringing people in and kind of just keeping the people that thrive. But I certainly don't have like clear boundaries or clear guidelines when people first come in. It's normally like, okay, you're going to scrub these screens for the next, month. And then we kind of just see how they go. But they're not necessarily getting like an outlined thing. And it's probably unfair that they're not getting some sort of path forward where, if you prove yourself in this position, there's an opportunity in this direction or that direction. It's really good advice.
So the problem with that, Cole, right, is that you're creating your own turnover problem because people can't see their career trajectory because nobody wants to do dishes forever, right? That's not a fun job unless you're one of these people who really loves to run the pressure washer because there's people like that. They get a lot of joy out of spraying that thing, right? And we want those people there, right? And so it's like if you have clarity on what it means to be a catcher, a press operator, an inker, an art person, a salesperson, marketing, whatever, what does it mean to be entry level? And then what does it mean to be level two or whatever? And how do you advance? And when am I having a raise? And, all that stuff should be detailed and very specific about it. And everybody should know what the expectations are. So if you want to be at this level, if you want this raise, these are the things you've got to do to earn it. We don't like reward people just because you've been here 10 years. That's silly. We reward you because you have this knowledge. You have this skill. This is your error rate. You're a seventh degree black belt samurai ninja level printer. You deserve the money. Right? Oh, do you cost us $8,000 a year in mistakes because you don't care? You don't deserve the money, right? And why are you still here, actually? So the clearer that we can be with this stuff, the expectations we have, the better off that we're going to be and the easier it is to manage. Because I'll tell you, varsity players want to play with varsity players. And when you finally get around to cutting the person who just wasn't fitting in and wasn't doing the work, everybody goes, gosh, Cole, how come you didn't fire Mary sooner? Gosh, it's so what a great relief that you did that, right? Because
that's exactly what I do.
Yeah. And have you heard that before?
Well, I just fired two people last week.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And did you hear from your staff? Hey, thank God they're gone. Did you hear that comment?
Oh, I had long conversations about how I was they didn't say the word wussy for not firing them. And so I always had there was a reason every single day to not fire them. because in the meantime, it's going to end up falling on me. And so in that meantime, there was always a reason why, okay, they're going to help knock out this and that, and then I'll be in a good enough spot for them to leave. And then now the next morning, oh, we didn't quite finish this and that, so now they have to do this. And oh, there's a rush that's due in 2 days. So now they're going to help with the rush. Then I'll have a reason to have them go.
Yeah.
And there was always a reason. And then basically in the last week and a half with them gone, I've just been showing up like an hour and a half early, and I'm doing their entire day's work. And so it's like, what was I waiting for other than just being a wussy? I don't know what it was.
Something you might think about is just hiring their replacement and getting them trained up, and you're paying two people. And then now there's no excuse as to not hiring them, because Billy is here and you can fire Fred. It's easy.
Yeah. So, I'm tempted to just hire Gavin again, but we can talk to Gavin. One of the people was my art person. So it might be a thing where just having outsourcing some of the tasks. Another thing that Gavin's amazing at is he's really good at remote workers. And one of the people that got fired was in the office doing things like quotes, which I don't really believe needs to be in person. So that kind of stuff can be really interesting as a cost-saving measure. And also, it seems like Gavin gets a lot of productivity out of the people that work for him remotely, whereas I'll have people who insist on being 40 hours a week, but yet when I walk in on them, they don't seem to be busy. I really want to replace these people on a completely different level than what I was doing with them before.
So do you have VAs, Cole?
At the moment, I have none, but Gavin has some for the podcast that I've been speaking to, and they just seem to be really responsive.
So I have a VA. She's worked for me for over 2 years, and she's awesome. Her name's Lyra. I go through a company called Legacy Virtual, who is a Shirt Lab sponsor. Say hi to them.
Oh, cool.
And they actually are placing a lot of VAs in industry shops. And actually I've worked with them to detail the processes that this industry kind of needs. And to me, a VA is really great for anything that you need, that where I don't actually have to be here. They obviously can't clean a screen, but they can put an order in. They could do social media. They can do order acknowledgments. They can do tracking numbers. They can do marketing. They could do like a gazillion things that you don't have to be there for. Right. Yeah. And, in my VA, Lyra, she does my personal stuff. She does my Midjourney newsletter stuff. She does Shirt Lab stuff. She does a lot of things, and she totally kicks ass. And these are dedicated, smart, capable people. They just live on the other side of the planet. Right. Yeah. And, so I would look into that and, whatever service you use. Now, just like any employee, they have to be trained. You have to take care of them. You have to have discussions. You have to be personally engaged with them. You have to pay them. You've got just like any employee, right? They're just not going to just like know instantly what to do. You've got to start and work up, right? And so that's important.
This follow-up question for both of you is then, how do you know how long something is truly taking them, and how do you get the right result you would want?
It doesn't matter.
If they tell me they spent an entire day on a quote versus what should have been, an hour and a half on something complicated, how do you even adjust for that?
Well, that's
how do you guys handle
that? That's you, Cole, going, hey, right now we're starting at zero. When you get going with this, this should take you 10 minutes.
Right.
Yeah.
And so I'm going to say, okay, at 10 minutes times 20, this is how many you should be able to do by lunch or whatever. Right. Mm-hmm. And so to me, it's all about the outcome. Like what are you wanting from your VA? Like, I just give Lyra a giant pile of stuff to do. I don't care how long it takes her to do it, because she's got to do it all.
Yeah. So does she have some sort of set salary from you?
She makes an hourly wage that the company that she works for pays, right? And then I am billed. And then for that, and then I give her bonuses and stuff. Like I just gave her a bonus last week, right? So totally unexpected, just me being nice guy bonus, right? Yeah. And because I want her motivated and happy, right? It, just like any employee. So, you know, and but she has things that she's got to do every day. She's keeps track of stuff for me. I mean, if like you might look at what I do online on social media, okay, I haven't posted anything in 2 years, Cole.
And it's all, it's just all managed.
Somebody's
by her.
Doing that for me.
Yeah.
I don't, yeah. I can do stuff like this podcast because I'm not worrying about what's on Instagram.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, Cole, actually, you asked that question about maybe like 2 months ago. Right. Yeah. And it kind of stuck with me because like I've been wrestling with that for a while because, you know, I deal with a lot of the overseas folks. And there's two camp. Right. There's a camp that says, hey, I completely trust you. You take care of it. Of course, you could see what's going on. Right. And then there's another camp. Well, I need to like literally micromanage what you do, right? And I did not want to be in that camp where I micromanage what you do. But I also don't think being on the camp where you just kind of like hope and wish they get it done is the right approach. And Cole, because of that question you asked about 2 months ago, it really like just sent me down this like little, I went and like researched different ways to try to like handle this, right? And what we've been doing lately is like, what is that that hybrid where our people still feel value? Are people, I'm not overlooking their, over their shoulder, recording their screen or whatever, but also gives me control, gives me visibility, gives me what I need to run a business. And yeah, we've been able to find something that kind of like, where they could almost self-report, but on a more every project that they're working on, right? And you could see that. So I think that's a good approach where you're still giving the people the freedom, but as a business, you still need to be able to see, especially for our business, we still need to be able to see what's going on, right? Now, generally, when it comes to VA, I think every shop owner should have a VA like working for them. I remember when I got my first VA, it was such a breath of fresh air because I had an in-person assistant. That in-person assistant cost me a lot of money. They wasn't doing half the things I wanted them to do. I remember I went to deliver a job to a customer. I came back. The person had their feet up on the table and watching YouTube. I'm like, that's crazy. So no. it really gave me the motivation to just like go down this VA thing. And when I found them, I was like, yeah, a lot of these folks, if you could find the right people, they will do so much more work for you. And they'll do it like you could feel that they're committed. Right. And you could feel that they're genuine. At the same time, you still have to be able to be a good manager. I think it's a great opportunity for somebody that hasn't managed people. You could like get your management chops through a virtual assistant because they're not going to cost you as much. And if you make a mistake, it doesn't like it may not like ruin your business. So you have less risk to like really just kind of test different things. And what I've been finding is like, is you really just limited by your creativity and the work that you want to do, like on what you want to do. Like if you want them to do different things and you're willing to invest with them and you're willing to just kind of just hold their hand for a little bit, at a certain point, they'll just take it and run and do a lot better. But in the beginning, there is some investment. And I think a lot of time, that's what investment in time, investment in just making sure your business is clean, investment in making sure that your systems are good. Because if not, they're not going to be able to produce for you, because if it's chaotic, they won't be able to produce. So that upfront work you got to be able to do.
So you're saying there's no hope for me?
I got you, Cole. I got you.
I'll steal Christine. Marshall, besides just the VA thing, what do you see out of successful shops, whether they're big or small, as far as handling and managing customer service and sales?
Well, I think the most important thing you can do is identify your ideal customer. And if you mm-hmm. start with that, everything works out. I think a lot of people make the mistake of they'll just do anything, right? And the problem with doing anything is you fill up your schedule with a lot of low profit, like not like ideal orders. And you're mm-hmm. working with customers that they're more transactional and that you're not in alignment with them. So what I would do, I can tell you because I've asked this question a gazillion times, probably about, 60 or 70% of this industry is operating without a business plan. So they have a moving target. They have no idea who their ideal customer is, how frequently they order, what is their best order, what is the best order for the shop, where they make money, what is their ideal gross and net profit. They don't know this stuff because they haven't done the work. And what they do is they build what I call the field of dreams mentality, which is if you build it, they will come, right? If I get an auto, I'll get orders, you know, and that's far from the truth. You have to be doing things. And also a lot of people sit like a spider in a web waiting for customers to call instead of aggressively going out and hunting for new business with their business plan in mind. So if, for example, if you want more 500 piece orders, what sales actions are you doing that's going to drive 500 piece minimum orders? So if you just sit there and wait for stuff, all you get is these 60 piece orders and 48 piece orders or whatever, because you're not going out there and looking for those 500 piece orders, you're never going to get to what you want because you're not actually doing the work. And so this is why. I'm sorry?
Go ahead, finish. Oh, I was just going to expand on the outside sales element. Like, what do you think is a good way to approach outside sales and bring in those big orders without just cold calling, you know, the front desk girl?
It's everything.
How do you normally handle that?
Well, it depends on the customer, right? So who is your ideal customer? Let's say your ideal customer is a hospital, right? And you want, because they have 2,000 employees and they do all these Habitat for Humanity and cancer walks, and they order a lot of promo. They order a lot of stuff. They will be that's a $300,000, $400,000 a year client easy. Okay.
Yep.
Getting it is the challenge. So are you going to post on Instagram and get a hospital? No, you're going to have to align yourself up with the HR department or the marketing department. A lot of these people have an agency. So you got to learn how to get in with that to be able to learn to sell the hospital by getting in there and asking questions and going after it. They're not coming to you. You have to go get them, right? So to me, it depends on the customer, right? That's why a business plan is the thing where you need to start, because it's research-based, it's based on data, it's based on market surveys, it's based on your experiences. You might already have an ideal customer, right? But a really great thing to do, and I talk about this all the time, so it's not really a new thing, is to do an 80-20 deep dive on your current customers. You know, your top 20% of your customers give you 80% of your revenue, right?
Yeah.
This is absolutely true right now. So you've got QuickBooks, you've whatever program you're using, export that and sort it by customer with total sales. And you'll see that your top 20% of your customers give you the lion's share of the money that's coming in. The other side of that coin is that you've got 80% of your customers, okay, that only give you 20% of your money. This is why your production schedule is full of crap, right? This is all that stuff that you're taking that you don't need to be. This is why you're having to start a second shift and you're not making any profit, okay? It's because you're targeting the wrong customers. So this is why if you don't have a business plan, if you don't really know who and what you're going after, then how do you know how to build it? How do you know how to market? How do you know what to do? So this is where the thinking part of things really needs to happen, because if you do more thinking and less reaction, you'll be proactively going after your ideal customer, and you could have a better result. It's not guaranteed, of course, but you'll have a better chance of it because you're actually aiming. It's like a bullseye, you know? If you want to hit the bullseye, you have to aim. It's the same thing in business. If you want a certain type of customer, you have to aim your marketing and your sales effort and your customer service effort at that customer. Otherwise, you'll never get the result. And any result that you get, it's probably just luck more than anything, right? Yeah. And I don't know about you, but I don't want my business relying on luck to be successful.
Go ahead.
Yeah, well, it's hard for me to shut up sometimes. Which is a lot of times, you know, people reach a certain level and they can't get to the next level in their brain. What's the next level, right? Mm-hmm. That's why there's plenty of $600,000 or $700,000 shops. They can't get to $1 million because what has gotten them there, it only goes so far. You know, yeah.
So kind of going off of that with the, you know, your best clients, what I've experienced in the past is there's been clients where like a single client is $300,000 worth of work and they can really suck up a lot of your time. And they're also a reason at different points in our history why we expanded. But then also sometimes when it's not even your fault, but just like they change their marketing budget or they change the way that they create their apparel, because now they're just going overseas, even though you didn't mess up their production, but they just grew into the point of going overseas. In those kind of situations, how do you see shops successfully managing that giant hole in revenue? Because I've seen that a lot where companies are just far too focused on a single client or one or two clients, and losing them can just decimate their general production.
For me, getting those big customers are, I think, is a lot more riskier. It's a lot riskier with a big customer than, say, a medium-sized customer that is your ideal customer. Because if that big customer decides to leave, yeah, you've already made the investment. They don't care. Like, you right. still got this press that you got to pay for. You still have these people that you got to pay for. You can't just go and fire these people just because of that. Maybe you can, but it wouldn't be the right thing to do. So I don't think any customer that's too big, I don't think you should get them, in my opinion.
Well, I mean, the thing is, like, it's just so easy. You know, like, if like we're doing, I don't think it would matter if I say who it is, but we're doing a big bakery in Southern California. And so they are doing an order that's over 30K, and they'll put another order in 2 months or so. And that's the kind of clients I want, because I'm going to print like just their logo on all of these items that are going to be given away or be given to staff. And mm-hmm. then I'm going to, I buy all the blanks. I run all the order. It's honestly not that much work, considering we have autos. So like I'm maybe going to dedicate like 2 days to it as far as production. So getting those types of clients is awesome. But then the problem is when that kind of client goes away for any number of reasons,
yeah,
you went from being nice and cushy with, you know, oh, I'm just pulling in whatever 100,000 from this client to I'm 100,000 in the hole as far as gross revenue.
Yeah.
And all I can end up managing to find is new clients that want 50 pieces. So like finding that great client is always the goal, as opposed to, because I could do, I mean, for $30,000+ in sales, that could be 25 orders, or it could be only their one order.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, when I'm making money $1,000 at a time, I would much rather have the big client. And it's just so much less work as far as setup and sales and all that. Just time consuming with like approvals, all this back and forth, or I can have one great client. It's an interesting thing to try to find that balance.
Yeah, it is. And especially if you're trying to build your business. So let's say you want to try to build your business to sell it. Like, from what I heard, most people that's buying businesses, they don't want that, where one customer has complete control over your business this way, right?
Right.
They want you to have a balanced book of business, decent size, not like on the smallish, but decent size. So I think then that should be the focus. Hey, where, how do I get these? What is that ideal ticket or average money I want to make per order? Like, let that be the driver, right? Hey, every order, if it could be, keep it around $3,000 to $5,000, right? That's like the sweet spot or whatever. If you can, whatever that happened to be. And then I just like Marshall was saying, I think that would give you some clarity. Then you could start answering those questions. Hey, what customers could do that for me? Maybe a restaurant, maybe this hospital that he was talking about, maybe a construction company, you know? Because you could kind of just drop names into that bucket, and then you could just try to go out and strategize trying to get those customers.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, it seems like we're probably not going to get Marshall back, so I believe we're going to conclude the episode. But we want to thank Marshall so much for being on the episode, and we're going to link to his website and Shirt Lab's website so that you can follow him and connect with him if you're looking for any advice on your print shop. And thanks so much for listening. Please like, subscribe, and tell your mom about us. We'll see you next time.
Peace.